Juan, and welcome to today's Campus Technology presentation. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Linda Briggs. I'm a contributing editor here at Campus Tech, and I'll be your moderator today. Our event is titled Facilitating Social Interactions, Measuring Engagement and Promoting Academic Success Within the LMS. It's sponsored by Moodle Rooms, Intel, and Dell, and we have an excellent presentation lined up for you. We're going to have a discussion with our three guest speakers, each of whom I think we can safely say is a thought leader in the online learning space in higher ed. We're going to talk about social media and collaboration and what impact those technologies have on the use of analytic technologies, time permitting, in learning management systems and how those technologies are being used. So it's a lot of ground to cover. I'm looking forward to a rich, multifaceted discussion with lots of opinions aired. And as also, we do welcome your questions and comments, so you can send those in throughout the event. So glad you could join us. It's definitely going to be an interesting hour. Just a few background items before we get into the main event. First of all, we are recording today's broadcast, and you will receive an email after the event with instructions on accessing that on demand. And we do encourage you to share that link with colleagues as well if you enjoyed today's content. If you are having any trouble with the audio or advancing the slides, first of all, we suggest that you disable your pop-up blockers that can interfere with the presentation management system. You can also try closing and reopening your console or pressing Control F5 to refresh your screen. Do adjust your volume if you're having trouble hearing me using whatever control works for you. This is an interactive event. As I said, we do welcome your questions and comments. That's one of the things that makes these campus technology events so popular is your participation. So please, throughout the event, if you have a question or comment for our panelists, do go ahead and type it in there on the chat box on your console and send it over. And finally, if you have a different question, something I haven't covered, or you need additional assistance, go ahead and click on the Help button there on your console, and we'll get you some assistance. Okay, our agenda for today. After this quick introduction, we've got a lot of ground to cover, so we're going to launch right into today's topic, which is learning management systems in the context of online learning, facilitating social interactions, measuring engagement, and really it's all about promoting student success. So we're going to focus on that. Again, we're going to keep the final portion of the event open to your questions, so please do send those in throughout the discussion, and our panelists will be addressing those at the end of the event. Okay, at this point, let me introduce our guest panelists for today. Stephen Downs works as a senior researcher for the National Research Council of Canada and the Institute for Information Technology. Stephen specializes in online learning, new media, and pedagogy. His daily newsletter, OL Daily, is distributed to thousands of subscribers worldwide. If you don't subscribe to that, I do highly recommend it. Stephen is based in Moncton, New Brunswick, so he is joining us today from the far-flung reaches of northeastern Canada. And to add to our geographic mix, we have Colin Beer, who is an educational developer at Central Queensland University in Rockhampton, Australia. Colin is a co-founder and contributor to the Indicators Project, a CQ University research effort that compares learning management systems usage across institutions and platforms. Colin works on building and extending prior work in the usage of in the analysis of usage data from the LMS, data that can then be used to further identify further opportunities for research and to help inform the decision-making of instructors, staff, and students. So he'll be bringing a very interesting perspective to our discussion today. And joining us from Moodle Rooms is Lou Pugliese, who is president of Moodle Rooms. Lou is an entrepreneurial business strategist with global vision and demonstrated talent for identifying emerging education technology trends and opportunities. He has a successful history of driving growth and success in multiple companies in the K-20 learning space. If his name is familiar to you, it's because Lou has held several senior executive positions, including founding CEO of Blackboard, Inc. Lou has 23 years of learning management experience with major brands. He's also a noted international speaker on technology innovation in education, and he's addressed a wide range of issues in education and education policy. As I said, he's currently president of Moodle Rooms. So welcome to all three of our guest speakers, certainly an esteemed roster, and I'm Linda Briggs with Campus Technology. Glad all of you could be with us today. Just a couple notes on who we are before we get into our main event. Most or all of you are familiar with our magazine and website. We're at campustechnology.com, very rich resource for information on technology in higher ed. We also have an annual conference. Our summer 2011 conference will be our 18th annual, I believe. We also have your virtual conference this year that you might want to check out. It's in November. And that's a great way without leaving your desk to meet with peers, hear from vendors, attend sessions, and so forth. So more information on our website. Do check that out. We also have a swap of email newsletters that can deliver information into your email inbox. And we have a presence on Facebook and Twitter if you'd like to join us there. Okay, as I said, our sponsor today is Moodle Rooms. Founded in 2005 by educators, and this is a company that we're hearing a lot about in the higher education space lately. Moodle Room's mission is to provide open, accessible, and flexible learning management solutions using open source Moodle at their core. For more information, we do encourage you to visit them at moodlerooms.com. Please do support our sponsors by paying them a visit there after the event for more information. Okay, and on that note, let's go ahead and get started. If you are just joining us, again, our panelists today are Stephen Downs with the National Research Council and the Institute for Information Technology in Canada, Colin Beer with Central Queensland University in Australia, and Lou Pugliese with Moodle Rooms. I don't want to spend too much time on this intro slide, but I do want to put it in your deck so that you have an idea of where we're going today. We're going to start with a quick discussion of what's happening lately in the learning management space to set some context for today's discussion. And I'm then going to turn to our experts for best practices in cultivating a positive online learning environment, especially with the use of social media and collaborative tools, along with the LMS, of course, which is the core of our discussion today. We're then going to move into talking about student engagement and measuring student engagement. Colin's input there will be very interesting as well. That means analytic technologies, sometimes referred to as business intelligence tools, how they can be used with the LMS, and what those analytics can tell us about teaching today. And, in fact, we're going to come back to that again and again, the effectiveness of these different tools. I'm hoping that will be a theme throughout our discussion. Okay, on that note, let's go ahead and get started. I want to begin our discussion today with a fairly simple lead-in. We're talking about learning management systems, of course. I want to ask our guests to very briefly describe the most dramatic advancement they're seeing today in the learning management system space, and correspondingly, perhaps, what they'd like to see. So, Stephen, I'm going to turn to you first. You're well known for your opinions on higher education, and I mean that in a good way, of course. So let's start with you. What do you see happening in the learning management systems space today, and what would you like to see?
Well, interestingly, if you look at some of the conferences that have addressed the future of the learning management system, the most significant advancement in the learning management system is the death of the learning management system. There has been a lot of discussion about whether the LMS has lived out its usefulness and whether new technologies are needed to supplant the LMS. But given that we're living in a world of LMSs and looking specifically within the LMS environment, we're seeing, I think, two major things. First of all, improved tools to allow people to create custom learning materials inside their own learning management system. And secondly, we're looking at the capacity of the LMS to interact with systems external to the LMS. And by this, I don't mean just the institutional student information system, but external systems like Facebook, like Twitter, and any of the other Web 2.0 applications that we've seen.
So incorporating some of those applications into the learning management system.
That's right, and sometimes content from the learning management system being broadcast out to those applications.
Yeah, which is what I think we're seeing happening. Let me turn to our guest from Australia now, Colin Beer, for kind of a hands-on perspective as a practitioner. Colin, what do you see happening from your vantage point there at Central Queensland University?
You look at Australia, Stephen. basic advancement would be the move away from proprietary LMS to open source learning management systems. Although I do believe this trend is probably slightly faddish in nature. But I really like the idea of a software system such as an LMS that evolves based on the needs of the community, and the people who are using the LMS can push that evolution.
Interesting. Okay. Let me turn to Lou now. As the president of Moodle Rooms, you're probably the guest with the most power to make these things happen in learning management systems. What are you seeing, Lou?
Well, you know, I think there are things today that we see as part of learning management as a system that was largely based on a design for a transactional system, much like ERP, and the design obviously has to change. So you see applications like mobile, reporting and analytics, you know, as obviously part and parcel of this transaction system. But, you know, as Stephen indicated, it's a very sort of different learning environment, and we have to move in a completely different direction. So moving from structured to an unstructured environment where, you know, in the structured environment, you have a very linear process of learning, very transactional. In the unstructured environment, you have what used to be called informal tools like wikis, blogs, RSS feeds, a variety of different social tools, which are now becoming much more formal. And so the design construct for new learning management will really evolve around numerous different domains instead of one domain. So the domain of the institution, for instance, the domain of the community, and the personal domain in terms of, you know, information that comes to you based on a particular profile. In other words, a movement towards a system that can shape and bend towards a particular profile.
It's an interesting comment on the move from structured to unstructured, Lou. Where do you see us now in the curve in that move?
You know, we're in transition. We're in the early part of a transitional stage right now, and we're seeing a significant demand from, you know, from the market to have much more flexible and open source, open, you know, types of tools, which is why there's been such an interest in the open source environment, because the construct of the open source environment is based on flexibility. So it can, you know, bend and shape towards a number of different institutional, community, and personal needs. And so we're just on the front end of that, but we're going to have to go through a pretty significant evolution over the next few years.
Yeah. And, Stephen, is that what you see happening, is an evolution right now in the learning management system?
Absolutely. I think there's no question of that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Let's move to talking about some best practices. What I want to ask guests is, since we told the audience we would talk about some best practice content, I wanted to talk about, with all the talk about the changes taking place in the LMS and the online learning environment in general, what are some best practices that our speakers can offer for instructors in cultivating a positive learning environment online? And Colin, maybe we'll start with you. I saw a recent presentation you put together that talked about 7 principles of good practice in undergraduate education. I believe that was the title. Do those apply here? Can you share some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, probably the 7 principles is a set of principles that guide the service delivery, more so than a learning theory, I guess. But the term best practice sort of prickles me a bit. Is it, you know, it implies that there's a single best way of doing something, and I think that belies the underlying complexity of teaching and learning. But probably the single thing that we're finding here at City University, and this is backed up by our research and academic analytics and also our student feedback, is teacher presence. Teacher presence in the online course is probably the biggest single factor we're finding that makes a difference with student engagement. Student surveys have always indicated that they would like more frequent and richer interactions with their teachers, and the analytics research has shown a distinct correlation between, for example, the number of clicks on Moodle by the instructor and the number of clicks on Moodle by that group of students. So, yeah, it's to answer your question in 2 words, teacher presence.
So teacher presence, okay, that's an interesting one. Stephen, let me go to you for a best practice suggestion. We've talked about this before. What do you suggest?
Well, I'm not really a best practices person because, you know, it sort of suggests that there's one practice that is going to be, well, best.
Yeah.
But, how do I want to phrase my answer to this?
Suggestions, perhaps, or what you've seen that's been successful from your observation point in online learning?
Yeah, I think presence is important, but presence is one of those vague words that you need to pin down. What do you really mean by presence? When I talk to people, I talk to them about being paradigms or models or examples or ideal users of the system. In other words, to model the sorts of behaviors that they're looking for in the participants in the online environment. And this varies, of course, depending on what the online environment is. But typically, it's going to involve really four major steps. First of all, the aggregation of the material. They're making sure that you're reading what the students produce. You're reading what's relevant in the field. Then the remixing, bringing things together, bringing things from different people or different sources into the same environment. Repurposing is the third step. Sometimes talked about as localization, sometimes talked about as putting on a personal spin. It's actually creating and then distributing as the fourth step this to the participants in the community or in the environment. So, it sounds like it's a very simple sort of thing, but really it's attending to all aspects of the communication process, from input to working with content to output. Doesn't sound nearly as impressive as it should, but really I think it is very simple strategies that work.
Yeah, I think that's a good list. Well, let me ask you this. How effectively do you think that list is being employed in what you see and in the classroom right now?
Well, I don't look into actual classrooms very much because I'm very much a post-LMS person. I do some work in LMS development, but the classes that I do online, we try to get people out of the LMS and producing content anywhere on the internet that they can. And, in that environment, I'm seeing a lot of this inside the classroom because it's so hidden, you don't see it so much, and I certainly don't see it at all.
Let me turn to Lou now for a discussion of social media. Stephen's saying that in his classes, and I know you do teach some online courses, Stephen, he brings in many other tools on the Internet, so I'm guessing some of that is social media. Lou, how effectively are you seeing that done in learning to
Well, I think we're early in the process right now. I mean, certainly communication, collaboration, social tools, both in the formal and informal setting, have added a lot of value to a linear course environment to add context and content to what a student is learning. But we need to look at social tools as sort of a persistent, collective, longitudinal resource, not just an incidental exchange of ideas or a one-off event in time. When it happens, when these types of social media exchanges happen, it's an activity when it happens, but it becomes a resource thereafter. So we need to look at it within that context. And in a conversation I actually had with Stephen Downs the other day, he was encouraging people to look at, social tools and social media as a system of networks and not just inside an institution or an institutional perspective. So social media within an education setting allows you to blur the lines between the institution and the network itself.
So. Yeah, interesting. So regarding that, are the tools there to do that, to bring social media into a learning management system and into the classroom? Or, as you said, we're pretty early on the curve with a lot of this, Lou?
But, you can ask Stephen and Colin what they think in terms of what their experience is. My sense is that, how we've defined social tools within a learning management system is is somewhat limiting. I think when you take into consideration the collection of social tools and activities outside a formal learning setting, collectively in a mashup environment, it may make, you know, 100% solution, but it's still very early.
Colin, can you comment on that as well? Does it seem like it's fairly early for you as well in terms of using these tools within a learning management system and in the classroom?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's very early days, I think. And I really love the connected nature of the social media, as Stephen's sort of alluding to, I believe. But I think there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect between the closed nature of the typical LMS and the open nature of social media. So, well, we've got open standards like RSS and those sort of things that can help. It's really an evolutionary change in the way that universities manage their e-learning, I think. So there's probably a broader consideration there.
Yeah, talk to me a bit more about that, Colin, that disconnect that you're seeing. Is that in users or in technology or in both?
It's probably more to do with university governance, I think. I mean, universities adopt an LMS, typically adopt a single LMS to meet their e-learning needs, and they haven't moved out of that mode that, you know, everything must be encapsulated within the LMS, so all the activities, resources, whatever, has to happen within the boundaries of that LMS. So they haven't sort of moved ahead and recognised that, hey, it's a bigger world. It's a bigger world in terms of there's a whole heap of social media and connected tools out there that can be brought into the LMS. Also, my fact is that we're quite a small regional university in Australia, and as such, we're probably very cautious in terms of making those leaps early.
When we say, just to clarify, when we say social media, what I'm thinking of is sites like, obviously, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, I don't know, Flickr, the photo sharing site, and so forth. Is that too limiting a list? Stephen, additional things that you would add to that definition of social media?
Oh, goodness, where to start?
Yeah.
Short answer is, yeah, that's way too short a list.
Right.
The long answer, well, I can't give you a long answer because there are thousands of social media type applications out there now, and I'm not even thinking of the world of apps and app stores and all of that sort of stuff.
So just your definition, perhaps. What to you makes a social media application or tool?
If I had to define it, and I'm not a definition person, so don't take this as a definition, but if I had to define it, I'd say something like it is an application that can be accessed via the web or other internet technology that can have more than one user present in the same environment and preferably at the same time, although I don't want to limit it to that.
Okay.
Where the users can exchange artifacts with can create and exchange artifacts with each other and ideally collaborate in the creation and exchanging of these artifacts.
Okay.
So there's the three elements, and I think all three of those are essential. It has to be online, right? If it's not online, it's not social net. It has to involve more than one person, and it's not just a chat. You have to actually create something.
Yeah, okay. So internet, more than one user, and shared content, I think. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Just to clarify how we're using that term.
Yeah, well, other people would talk about social as in social network, as in sets of friends and connections and all of that, and I think it's possible to make that more rigid a definition than is necessary. Anything where you can share online really counts as a social networking application. And by that definition, there are thousands of them.
Right, and which I think points exactly to why we're talking about this in the context of a learning management system. There's that clear sharing of content that ties them together.
Well, except in a learning management system. And this is an important point to bring up, and Colin just brought it up as well. And, you know, when you've been asking these questions, you've been talking about bringing in these applications or bringing in the content or bringing in the people, you know, as though the social network comes into the learning management system. And that's exactly the opposite of the way it should be. And, you know, learning management systems aren't there yet. But we need to think about the learning management system projecting out into this network of thousands of social networking applications rather than bringing them in.
Interesting comment. Lou, did you want to address that?
No, I think Stephen said it accurately.
Okay. Let's move on to talking about student engagement. We've described and talked about learning management systems and social media and engaging the two and so forth. What about measuring, first measuring and then analyzing student engagement? And Colin, I think your perspective would be particularly interesting here. How can we collect data from our LMS, and then how can we make use of these vast amounts of data that can be collected, and is that being done successfully? Can you talk a little bit about the project that you've worked on that does that?
Yeah, sure. There's probably two sections to my answer here. The first is that probably the better question is, why do we want to measure engagement? I guess we want better outcomes for our students. So there's more to that than just measuring engagement, I guess. So, you know, course design within the LMS and those sorts of things have a huge impact on student engagement. But in terms of what we're doing with the indicators project, basically, we set about trying to figure out what engagement is. Now, because of the limitations with the reporting capabilities of the LMS, we've sort of come back to using hit counts as a broad measure or a broad indicator of student engagement. And in terms of our project, we've taken hit counts from both our old Blackboard 6.3 LMS and our new Moodle LMS, and we've compared that with student results. And that gives us a whole range of different dimensions by which we can analyze the data. So we look at, you know, longitudinal feature adoption by staff, according to, you know, Stephen Malachowski's model, the impact of staff activity on student engagement, the impact of class sizes, and those sorts of things. So that's what we're up to with this project. Now, I understand that hit count it's a very loose link with student engagement, but with online students, we've sort of got no other indication of how they're engaged because, you know, it's linked to their motivation, which is internal to them. So, yeah, that's what we're up to.
And that's an ongoing project, right, that indicators project? That's something you're still working on?
Yeah, what we're doing is we're looking at LMS usage patterns across learning management systems, across institutions and across time. So basically we've created a database that's platform, institution, and LMS independent, and we're comparing institutions, learning management systems and those sorts of things based on the data that these LMS collect. And the data that the LMS collect is generally inert. It's not being used by anyone to any great extent. Certainly not when compared to the way the business world uses their data warehouses to, you know, inform their marketing and that sort of thing.
And as I understand it, one of the genesis, the starters for your project was realizing that there wasn't a lot of measuring and gathering of this kind of data going on or analyzing of it.
No, that's right. And we really stumbled across it by accident. I mean, the old Blackboard 6.3 installation, for whatever reason, the IT department wasn't clearing the logs at the end of every month. So basically we had a six-year record of every staff and student clicked within the system, which is an enormous amount of data by which we can mine into and look the patterns of behaviour, especially when we can link that to the student administration system, which stores, you know, the grades and student demographic information. So there's an enormous wealth of data, and there's an enormous number of ways by which that data can be analysed as well.
Yeah. Let me back up a step here on the second bullet point and go to the question, must students engage to be successful? And Lou, maybe can I turn to you for a comment on that?
You know, well, certainly engagement is measured by behavior.
Yeah.
And on too many occasions, we use data without context where specific student behavior measurement online becomes a traffic report, and the traffic report becomes used as a blunt object. And so it's really easy to pull narrow sets of data out of an LMS and draw incidental inferences on activity. It's quite another task to use analytical reporting and technologies as a means of determining a persistent student record of learning. And so that's the challenge when we talk about measuring engagement. I think you also have an issue of using multidimensional data from different data sources, not necessarily those that reside within an LMS. I think the other dimension is that in order for reporting and analytics to be effective, it's got to be ubiquitous. And in becoming ubiquitous, we need to drive an appreciation and usage down to the faculty level of an institution. And in order for data to be effective, it needs to be turned into a landscape. It's got to be visualized, not just numbers on a page, but it has it needs to have an information map, data that you can only see when you visualize it. And I think in looking at student behavior and student persistence, you have to look at it from a multidimensional perspective.
Interesting. And if I'm hearing you correctly, that's not really being done effectively now.
We need to move from static one-dimensional data to create more individualized, down to the student profile, intelligent agents, essentially, that monitor different behaviors, different static one-dimensional data, from a variety of different sources.
Stephen, from your point of view, how effectively is student engagement being measured, calibrated, and analyzed?
Well, I mean, you can't answer that just yes, no, good, bad, because it's going to very much depend on the system. And it's also going to depend very much on what you mean by engagement and, indeed, also what you mean by success. So, that kind of question I can't really answer. And I think we want really to look at different things. Like Lou just said, engagement is measured by behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us a picture of an engagement system that is going to look at behavior and have to be ubiquitous. And I don't know, I don't think you get away with that in Canada, simply because of privacy legislation, even if somebody is working in a learning environment. And, of course, certainly if somebody is working on the wider web, I don't know of anyone who wants all of their behavior tracked and monitored and added up. So I think there's an issue right there. I don't think that current privacy laws are going to support the sort of monitoring that some people envision in terms of engagement, especially if that engagement is outside the learning management system. But secondly, and I think this is really relevant, I don't think engagement is measured by behavior. And my wife knows about this because she can sit there and talk to me and I'm very animated and engaged and nodding my head and even saying the right thing at the right time, and half an hour later she refers to the discussion we just had and I'm a total blank. I behaved exactly right, but I was turned off. In our online courses, we are doing a fair amount of research to determine the level of engagement, and we're more interested in not the actions that people undertake, but the artifacts that they produce, because the artifacts themselves are, to my mind anyways, the best indication of the engagement. If a person is lightly engaged, the artifact will represent that by representing a superficial understanding or depiction of the subject. If they're deeply engaged, you'll get a much richer, more complex, involved, and detailed artifact.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the sort of thing you can just put a number on. And I think it's fascinating that Lou said you can't just look at the numbers. You have to look at a landscape. because it's this recognition capacity on the part of the instructor that tells them whether the person is engaged or not. And that is the same capacity that comes into play when you're looking at an artifact. You look at what the student actually said, just like my wife does when she talks to me a half hour later, and you can tell from that whether or not the person has been engaged. But that's a much tougher nut to crack computationally.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment. Let me turn back to Colin, because you have measured student engagement in the Indicators Project, for a comment on that.
Yeah, look, I really can't disagree. I guess in terms of the important thing is what you do with the analytics data, I think. And in our case, we're actually, you know, processing the analytical data and delivering that back to the students and staff, where the staff or the instructor is the guy with the coalface, and he's the guy that understands the context of that course and can interpret the data in terms of that course. As an example, we've got a little side project happening where we're trying to identify at-risk students. The university's got a bit of a nutrition problem. And so basically what we're doing is comparing current course offerings with previous course offerings and making determinations of what students within the current offering may be at risk. So, yeah, I think it's very important where the data sits. If it's used as a scientific tool, it's just not going to work. And our approach is that it's more of a weather forecast. Yes, it might have some scientific basis, but it really, at the end of the day, it's just a forecast and it's not necessarily definitive. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I'm going to move on to the next slide, unless there's anyone on the panel who wants to put in a final comment on this whole topic of measuring student engagement. All right. We're touching on analytics here, so I want to delve into that a little more deeply. And Colin, I may be calling on you again on this one. Once we have tools in place to measure student engagement, as we were talking about, how do we use that collected data effectively to really see what's going on? And Stephen had an interesting comment that you really need to look at the what the student is producing, not just the student's participation, if I understood that, and paraphrasing that correctly. But Colin, what are we looking for in data that we've collected? What have you been successful with in the Indicators Project?
I guess a lot of the analytical technologies have a sense of replace the human about them. And so to reiterate what I was saying before, to me that's an evolutionary dead end. It could be better utilized by combining the technology with the human mind, which means putting the data back in the hands of the instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the context in Australia is the course coordinators or the instructors design and deliver the course, which means that their conception of learning and teaching influences the way that students engage with the course. So that in itself it creates a great deal of complexity and a great deal of diversity in course designs and delivery strategies, for example. So it makes it very difficult to develop a consistent metric for student engagement. There's so much variation to be considered. So, again, we're mainly using the analytics information to inform teachers and students so they can evaluate the information in terms of their own context.
Okay. So let me turn to Lou at this point, talking about, Colin's talking about what we're looking for in the data and what we can use it for. Are there tools out there now, Lou, for analyzing data the way Colin's describing?
Well, you know, institutions, you know, at the IR level have been using these tools, you know, for years. And both on the administrative and the academic side, more recently on the academic side, I think that the challenges we have is enterprise applications, CognoSAS, those types of things are designed for large-scale sets of data that don't necessarily translate well into the academic environment. We don't have a lot of track record, frankly, in using these types of tools and technologies to do that. More importantly, the tools that we have today are not really about, they're about reporting data and one-dimensional information and numbers, as I said earlier. And I think to make data meaningful, you have to take into consideration information design and gearing that information design towards solving specific problems. And you have to know what problems you're trying to solve in advance to construct data models that work in an academic setting. And the other thing I would say is that we use analytics and reporting as a very back-ended process. Okay, so a student takes a course, we measure stuff. We measure online engagement. We measure, you know, grade book analysis. We measure engagement between faculty and groups. But we don't use it as a front-end process. So in other words, before you even sit down to design a course, you decide what you want to measure first and then design analytic, you know, engines or processes to measure what you want to measure in a course and how you actually want to design a course. Design it towards the measurement and not necessarily from a back-end process perspective.
Yeah, interesting comment. That's exactly what I wanted to get at, is the fact that there are business intelligence tools, as they're referred to, I think, mostly out there, but it sounds like what you're saying, Lou, is they really don't fit well into an academic environment necessarily for measuring what we're trying to measure.
No.
Yeah. Let's see. I think at this point I'm going to go ahead and move into our summary slide, talk a little bit about some of what a wrap-up, I guess, of what we've talked about today. We've talked about the role of the LMS in implementing academic-based analytic technologies and what can be collected. Colin had some interesting perspectives there. Let's move to the second bullet point. Stephen, let me go back to you here. Thoughts in summary on the place of social media in today's learning environment. We'll spend a few minutes on this slide, and then we'll move into taking questions that are coming in from the audience. So just a note to the audience, go ahead and do send in your questions. We'll be getting to those shortly. So, Stephen, let me go to you here.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I'd probably approach it slightly differently, and I'd say that social media is today's learning environment. You know, our discussion by necessity has focused on the learning that happens inside the learning management system and is offered by the traditional institution. But what we are seeing in the wider internet is that more and more people are doing more and more learning informally on their own in these social media environments. And they're seeing, if anything, their formal learning as an extension of their informal learning rather than the other way around. Their real lives, as opposed to the artificial lives that they have inside the classroom, their real lives are lived in this rich social network. And the artificial lives, where they suspend reality for an hour at a time, are the ones that happen in the classroom. And more and more, as time goes by, they will depend on the social media, the resources in social media, the interactions in social media to do their actual learning. And I think that the providers of learning are going to be faced with this, you know, maybe not specific applications. You know, Facebook comes, Facebook goes. Twitter comes, Twitter goes.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we're going to see what we're very loosely calling social media intruding more and more into formal learning processes. That was a little vague, but it's hard to understate the magnitude of the shift that I think is happening here.
Yeah, and in terms of that shift, it sounds like you already have UC social media being used in the classroom and used effectively?
Not only that, I'm saying it being used instead of the classroom and being used effectively.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting comment. Let me go to Colin and ask for his thoughts. Colin, your thoughts on the place of social media in today's classroom, how well it's being used and how it's being used?
Yeah, look, thoroughly agree with Stephen, I guess. But again, I come back to the disconnect between the closed nature of the LMS and the open nature of social media. So I guess there's an opportunity. What I'd like to see in terms of the LMS and social media is, for example, Moodle wants to utilize a blog, so they create their own blog. What I'd rather see is Moodle as a wrapper. It integrates existing successful blogs like WordPress, for example, rather than build their own and reinvent the wheel, they'd rather see them utilize existing social media and the elements become a wrapper for these social media packages, I guess. That's probably the only thing I'd add to what Stephen said.
Okay, we got some agreement there. Lou, let me turn to you, and if you have some concluding thoughts, then we'll move into our Q&A.
Well, I mean, on the social side, you know, I would say that, you know, these types of tools, and I would say, just to bridge on what Stephen said, I think, you know, the informal-formal lines are being blurred, and I actually think that the informal is, in fact, formal these days. And, you know, when we look at recipients, right now in a social environment, participators have been in the past recipients, and now we're moving from being recipients to creators. You know, I mean, you have students creating information, and that's sort of heightening the engagement, you know, back to the engagement issue.
Yes.
And so, you know, we know that students learn better in small study groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the question, you know, they do better on tests, they do better in courses, they persist longer. And so the question is, how do we organize that into a more formal setting? And I think that, you know, that's gonna happen over time.
All right. Interesting perspective. Thank you, all of you, for those comments. Let's go ahead and move into the Q&A portion of the event and grab some of these great questions coming in from the audience. Everyone, if you have a question, go ahead and type it into your console there in that chat area. Go ahead and send it over, and we'll see how many of these we can toss out to our panelists. Let me start with this question, and Lou, I think I may go to you with this one initially at least. The question is, knowing that we lose students by sending them to third-party websites, why wouldn't we instead embed or incorporate the same social media tools inside the LMS?
Well, I think that certainly is an option for a future design construct. You know, I think, you know, vendors who, like us, you know, and obviously we work in an open source environment, and so in an open source environment like Moodle, we have the ability to sort of shape the platform in a way that makes sense as learning management and the definition sort of evolves. But I would say that learning management systems of the future will be more organizers of information and become an organizing principle for all these external tools as opposed to becoming the tool unto itself.
Organizers of information, I like that. Stephen, let me give you a shot at this one as well. Incorporating third-party websites and social media tools inside the LMS?
Well, I mean, the short answer to that is because the only people that you have inside the LMS are the ones that are allowed inside the LMS.
Mm-hmm.
And that eliminates most of the network from the picture. One of the great things that I've had to experience teaching an open course, as I have with the current one on called Plank and the other ones I've done previously, is we get people from around the world, different cultures, different perspectives. They're all involved in this course, and they're involved in the course only because the course is not closed. There's no barrier preventing them from taking part in the discussion. And so, you know, I look at a question like that begins with a phrase like knowing that we lose students by da 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 da, and my response would be, well, maybe we should be teaching them how to navigate on their own or something like that, or even questioning what it means to lose students. Are we really losing students? Does it mean they can never find us again, et cetera? You know, there's a whole ontology, there's a whole world view that's incorporated in the first five words of that sentence, and I want to question that whole world view.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's go in a different direction with another question here. I think Colin, as our most hands-on participant on the panel, might be a good one for this one. So, Colin, here's the question. As an instructor, I have to deal with content. With so many forms of social media available, how do I keep up with both subject content and social media? Do I have to spend time as a developer when what I really want to do is teach? What do you see there at your university?
Yeah, look, difficult question to answer. I guess RSS is your friend. you know, make use of those tools that, that aggregate content from the various social media, you know, sites such as Delicious and those sorts of things. But yeah, you're right. It's an ever-shifting target, and it's very, very hard to keep up. So we make use of those sorts of tools. You know, Delicious tags. You sort of find out what people you want to follow in terms of blogs and those sorts of things, and you tend to stick within that group purely for time management purposes. So yeah, difficult question to answer.
So it sounds like it's a real challenge for instructors in terms of
time. It certainly is.
Yeah.
Apparently,
Stephen, yes?
Yeah. Social media is the way you deal with this content. Social media is how you make it easier for yourself to keep up with the content. I keep up with a rapidly changing, technically complex, multifaceted field using social media. If I tried that with traditional methods, I couldn't possibly do it. Social media makes it easier, not harder. Trust me.
So that's the answer, not the problem. Let me go to
exactly.
Another question. Yeah, thanks. Let me go to another question. Lou, you may be able to give us some perspective on this one. If you have a lot of social media outlets outside of the learning management system, how do you collect proof of learning for your institution and for your accrediting bodies? A very hands-on question there.
Well, you know, I think you can – I don't know there's a direct measurement. You know, I don't – when you're looking to develop mastery in a particular subject area for students in a course, mm-hmm. and you're dealing with a finite set of course materials, I don't know that there's any specific direct way to be able to measure that specifically. I mean, we have to understand that, you know, this is a very, you know, intelligent generation. You know, this is, you know, Gen Y and Gen Z is going to even be more intelligent and use these tools more effectively. So there's no control that we have on students using this. In fact, we should encourage them to use them more instead of encouraging them to use them less. And I don't know that it's a direct way you can draw a direct relationship. Only the mastery comes from numerous bodies of knowledge, not necessarily what just an instructor or a faculty member pushes down to a student within a course.
Okay. As we talk about social media, Stephen, this one may be for you. Is there a problem with forcing students to use external social media as a required part of their learning because those sites are outside the control and the privacy protocols of the institution, and that's something you've touched on, Stephen, that privacy issue?
Yeah, sure. Here's the way I represent it when asked, and because, you know, when I say social media and learning, the first thing that springs to mind is just exactly this, right? And there's another question in there asking for an example of an assignment involving social media, and the idea is that you're telling them to use social media, and how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction is to say, well, no, you don't have to. The whole point of this is that you're using the tools that work for you. Otherwise, there'd be, you know, there's no reason to use different tools, right? You just use the tool that was assigned, the LMS, and everybody uses the same tool. But the whole point of using different tools is it works better for you. If you're not comfortable with the tools, I would say, don't use them. If you're not comfortable with working outside the LMS, then work inside the LMS. We have our course set up. We've got people with their own blogs, and there's something like, I don't know, 230 blogs or whatever, all on different their own websites scattered around the Internet. But we also have an installation of Moodle up and running, and there are people who never leave the confines of Moodle, and they're perfectly happy with that. And I'm perfectly happy to have them perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. So the question becomes then, well, how do you frame the delivery of instruction in this model, and mm-hmm. the delivery, you know, and especially, you know, the assignment of tasks. And the assignment of tasks should be focused on what it is you want them to do, rather than how to do it. And I'll answer that other question by giving exactly an example of such an assignment. Such an assignment might be curate a discussion on a topic relevant to the material in this course. It's a very open-ended assignment. It doesn't tell them how to do it. You might tell them a bit about what it means to curate a discussion, but if they wanted to curate a discussion from the discussion thread on Moodle, that would work. If they wanted to curate a discussion from an interaction of posts and comments from blogs, that would work. If you wanted to curate a discussion of voice tracks or videos or whatever, that would work too. It's up to the student how they approach that, you know, provided that they're following the requirement of what is to be done, what action is to be taken, rather than what facility or what service they should use to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so you're not forcing students, I think is what you're saying, to use an external social media. You're asking them to produce something, and they make their way in doing that.
That's right. And I think you would find, and this is empirical and subject to verification, but I think you would find that over time, most people will want to use some external system because they're more familiar with it. They find it easier. It's more convenient for them, or they just prefer it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Let me see. In another direction here, I want to get to some of these other comments. Colin, maybe I'll turn to you on this one. What are your thoughts on integrating social media consistently into the learning management system or other structured environment when the social media is constantly changing or being deleted, links are removed, content is changed, et cetera? You're fairly hands-on in this space. How do you handle that?
Yeah, good question. If I can give one example of the way we're handling student blogs here, there's an in-house application or blog created for Moodle here called BIM, which is Blog Aggregation Management into Moodle. Uh-huh. So basically, the students go around and create their blogs on whatever system they like, be it Blogger, WordPress, whatever, and they register their blog within the Moodle site for this course, and it aggregates the posts based on various tags and provides marketing interfaces for the instructor. So I just think that it's back to that sort of wrapper concept where the LMS is tapping into these various social networks, and you know the students are free to use whichever one they like, and they, you know, it's basically giving an institution-centric point that aggregates the various artifacts created by the students. So that's sort of the approach we're taking.
Okay, and I think your comment there, Stephen, might be don't integrate it but link to it to avoid those sorts of changes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The idea is, you know, the internet is full of all kinds of stuff, and it's dynamic, and it's changing, and it's fluid, and you can't capture it and freeze it into a snapshot. So you link to it, and what we do is we link to rather more resources than we actually need, and that way we always know that there's going to be something there, and then the participants can choose from those resources. And if it's not there, well, it's not there. That's the internet. Move on to the next one.
Right. Interesting comments, everyone, and I'd love to grab some more of these questions, but we're just about out of time. First of all, to the audience, if we did not get to your question, we will be answering questions after the event via email. So please do go ahead and continue to submit your questions even while I'm wrapping up here if you'd like to do that. Great set of questions, and our panelists were full of good information, so we really appreciate that. Once again, I want to thank our speakers today. That was Lou Pugliese with Moodle Rooms, Stephen Downs with the National Research Council and the Institute for Information Technology, coming to us from New Brunswick, Canada, and Colin Beer, who is a curriculum design with the Curriculum Design Development Unit in Central Queensland University in Australia. So thank you to all of you. Really appreciate your thoughts and perspectives on a lot of different aspects to a huge topic. Also, we certainly want to extend a big thank you to Moodle Rooms, Dell, and Intel for underwriting today's event and allowing us to bring it to you free of charge. Again, we have recorded today's event, and we'll be making it available for on-demand viewing within the next 24 hours. We'll send you an email when that archive is ready. Please do share that link with colleagues who are interested in this topic as well. For information about this or other campus technology webinars, you can contact our e-content producer, Kanoi Namahoy, at the information there on your screen. And finally, from all of us today, thank you very much for attending today's event. This concludes our webinar.